This is an iHeart podcast. Guaranteed human.
Crime Stories with Nancy Grace. Music star D4VD, aka David Anthony Burke, in the last hours thrown into segregation, had to move jails after charges come down regarding the grisly murder and dismemberment of a 13-year-old girl, Celeste Rivas. Good evening. I'm Nancy Grace. This is Crime Stories. I want to thank you for being with us. As we go to air tonight, David Anthony Burke, a.k.a. D4VD, thrown into segregation, had to move jails after charges and arrest in a grisly murder of a then 13-year-old girl. And the allegations are disturbing. According to the prosecution, he murdered her with a sharp object because she threatened to come forward about their sex relationship, knowing it would destroy his music career. Why thrown into segregation? Straight out to Caitlin Becker, senior national correspondent, New York Post, and host of a hit new podcast, NY Postcast. Caitlin, thank you for being with us. Why segregation?
Well, Nancy, it's because of his notoriety. They're keeping him protected because he's a well-known person. Now, I use that term as loosely as I possibly can. I think it's this case that has really added to his notoriety. I mean, he wasn't exactly a household name coming into this investigation, but within the system, it does seem that they're a bit concerned that something could happen to him if he was maybe in Gen Pop or with some of the other inmates while he's awaiting trial, because, of course, he did not get out on bail because these charges are so incredibly egregious. So it's definitely for his protection. I do wonder how much that has to do with just the optics and the fact that he has a crack defense team of celebrity attorneys who would really hammer them if anything happened to him behind bars. So he is segregated. He's alone just basically because he's kind of famous.
Once at the jail, D4VD is now segregated from other inmates for being a, quote, noteworthy person. Now, you mentioned that he may be more popular behind bars than he is on the outside, but isn't it true? He was pulling in millions of dollars and had just launched his worldwide withered tour when Celeste's body was found in two different trash bags, her head in one trash bag. Actually, they're called body bags, so I'm not sure they're trash bags. And the rest of her body dismembered in the second bag in his frunk, the front trunk of his Tesla. Isn't that true? Just before that happened, he was leaving on a world tour?
That's exactly right, Nancy. He was certainly an up-and-comer. He was on the upswing of his career. Like I said, not a household name yet, but definitely in the hip-hop world and in that circle, someone that people knew. And all of those things that you just mentioned right there are going to come into play in this case. It was him being on the upswing in his career. It was the money that he was making at the time. And it was this world tour that he was about to embark on that prosecutors believe factored into why he ultimately allegedly slaughtered this girl, tore her apart, and stuffed her into those bags, as you know, as you just laid out there. The gruesomeness of the crime, they're saying, was all going to go back to the fact that she was going to allegedly expose their sexual relationship. I mean, she's a child. She was a little girl in this case. And what prosecutors believe is that she was going to come forward and that he allegedly thought that would derail his career, which obviously it would if that came out there. And, you know, I say obviously it would, but we've seen R. Kelly. We've seen things that happened with other domestic violence and other accusations with musicians. And sometimes it doesn't derail their career. It seems like the last bastion of celebrity that hasn't been impacted.
Wait a minute, Becker. Hold on.
Hmm.
Where is Sean Puffy Combs, a.k.a. Diddy, right now, tonight? Where is he?
You know what? You're right. This might mean a change of the tide when it comes to how hip hop stars and how musicians in particular are treated. Prison.
Jail. J-A-I-L. C-I. Correctional Institute. Prison. The big house. The pokey. The can. That's where he is. Okay.
Yep.
That's Diddy. Where is R. Kelly tonight?
He's in prison. But how long did it take to get there?
Oh. You're on cross exam right now. Okay. He's in jail. a.k.a. the Big House, the Can, the Pokey, CI Correctional Institute. Right. Okay. Lockdown. So that's Diddy. That is R. Kelly. Where is Weinstein? May he rot in hell. Where is he tonight? Caitlin?
He's in jail fighting for his release yet again.
Jail. Simple answer. And last but certainly not least, where's Epstein?
Dead.
He's dead with a little pit stop in the MDC, the jail. So I don't know what you're talking about, that music stars can get away with sex acts, and in this case, murder, and they get a hall pass, because that's not happening. To Joseph Scott Morgan joining us tonight, professor of forensics, Jacksonville State University. He is the author of a bestseller, Blood Beneath My Feet, on Amazon. He is the star of a hit podcast, much like Caitlin Becker's NY Postcast. His is Body Bags with Joseph Scott Morgan. But for my purposes, he is a death investigator who I first met over the phone, and he and I were arguing because I wanted discovery and I wanted it then in a murder case. And he didn't give it to me in a timely manner. That's how I remember it. Joe Scott Morgan, death investigator with over 10,000 death investigations under his belt of all sorts, of course, accident, natural causes, heart attack, stroke, cancer, of course, homicide, suicide, and undecided. So he's seen it all. Can we refresh Caitlin Becker's recollection as to why David Anthony Burke, a.k.a. D4VD, the music star, may not be getting out of jail anytime soon? Describe how this little girl's body was found. But wait a minute. Hold it. Joe Scott, listen to this.
The second is a special circumstance being that this murder was committed for financial gain. As the evidence will show in court, the financial gain was for Mr. Burke to maintain his very lucrative musical career that Celeste was threatening. The third charge, in addition to lying in wait and for financial gain, is murdering a witness to an investigation. In this particular case, as the evidence will come out in court, the witness to the investigation was Celeste. And the investigation was into the lewd and lascivious sexual acts committed by Mr. Burke that is the subject of count two of this complaint with Celeste while she was under 14 years old.
Joe Scott Morgan, I just wanted you to get the flavor of the charges. This is not just murder. This is not just dismemberment, which is your bailiwick. It is with a minor, lewd and lascivious acts on a 13-year-old girl. That much like, you and I investigated this together, the case of Nicole Lovell. Do you remember that 13-year-old little girl that was having with a much older college star, David Eisenhower, track star, valedictorian, aspiring architect, blah, 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 having with a 13-year-old girl saying he wanted to marry her and have children. Then when she said she was going to tell people about their relationship and their love, she ends up dead on the side of the road, buck naked, wiped down with alcohol wipes. Yeah, he's behind bars on life without parole.
And let's get something straight right from the top. This is not with a minor. This is, okay? Minors
can't
have
sex. Amen, brother.
And this is, and it's brutal. Hey, you know what happened in that car park when those investigators opened the lid on that frunk after they had been told that there was a foul odor? Let me tell you how this works in our world, in the world of medical legal death investigation. When they opened that frunk, there would have been a smell that rolled out and it assaulted everybody around there. I've been there for countless cases like this where you have remains that are found in trunks. And you know what else, Nancy? Not only did that assault the investigators when they opened it up, It was also insects. There were flies that came out of that environment, probably lighted on the investigators. That happens a lot. People don't understand that. And what they observed was one bag specifically that they're talking about that was covered with insects. You've got another bag that's contained in there, and contained within the bags are all that remains of Celeste. This is a brutal killing. Now, when we think about what the LA district attorney said, and particularly in their releases, I found it very compelling, Nancy, because they are talking about that this is a death that occurred with the utility of a sharp weapon. Now, that can mean any number of things. That can mean that she was stabbed. It can mean that she was cut or incised. But also coupled with that, and one of the things that they're faced with at this moment in time, and it's going to be confusing for some people, is that you've got dismemberment going on. So one thing happens before death, obviously. The other happens after death. So they've got all of these injuries and insults to the body. And also couple that with the fact that you have a body that was so disrespected and abused, this is the abuse of a corpse, that they're going to have a really hard time trying to explain this to a jury. This is going to be a very detailed, highly detailed forensic case. We're going to hear a lot about tool marks. We're going to hear a lot about hemorrhage. We're going to hear a lot, probably in my humble opinion, about entomology, because where has she been all of this time, Nancy? And I think the insects are going to lead back to possibly the flow of him moving this body around. You can't sell me on the fact that he took her body and left it in the front for the entire time. You know, I think we're hearing that she was last seen April 23rd, not found until well into September. So I think that the body was moved around. I don't think that she was dismembered initially. So where did he have the body? Was he moving around the house? And he's trying to make a decision about, what in the world do I do with her now after I've murdered a child?
Crime Stories with Nancy Grace.
Steve Fisher joining me right now. I'm hearing in my ear, joining us out of San Bernardino, California. He is a missing persons private investigator, search and rescue specialist, owner of Search Investigations, and he has individually added evidence to this case by surveilling and collecting ring cam, door cam, surveillance cam within that Hollywood Hills neighborhood, indicating that D4VD's Tesla was moved multiple times around the neighborhood so as to avoid detection. For instance, an abandoned car right in front of your house, how many days are you going to put up with that before you call to get it towed? To avoid that, the car would be moved around and around and around, like, what is that game where you walk around the chairs and when the music stops playing, everybody's got to sit down really quickly? That game. Except it was with his Tesla, with a dead body in it. Steve Fisher, in addition to discovering that information, handing it over to law enforcement, and searching the home yourself, you have created a timeline, which I find extremely probative. Could you explain your timeline and why you have come up with those particular dates and times?
Well, it actually has a lot to do with what Joseph was just saying. I became really interested in the time between prosecutors seemed fairly certain that April 23rd is the date that she was likely lured and killed by him. And that May 5th is the date of dismemberment. And building a timeline around that to see what his actions were right before and then after, and then around the dismemberment time. And it gets interesting. He leaves, you know, April 23rd is the day that they're literally announcing that Withered Tour is happening. And the next day, night of the 24th, he's on a plane to New York for a 3-day music pop-up in New York. And so he has a very short window of time, not only, unfortunately, kill her, but also figure out what he's going to do with that body, because he doesn't dismember her, if the prosecution is correct, until you know, May 5th. And that's a big window of time. He stores her somewhere. And that's what we're trying to figure out through the timeline. You know, on May 5th, Dusbury's back in L.A. He posts from downtown L.A. at about 11 p.m. at night. It makes you wonder, like, some of the pictures that we found on that camera card that he left behind, him and Celeste were in downtown. And it makes you wonder if there's a nexus to downtown L.A., if she was stored there.
Let's take a look in depth at your timeline. April 23, prosecutors allege Celeste arrived the evening of April 23 to D4VD's rented mansion there in Hollywood Hills. The Withered World Tour tickets up for pre-sale. Okay. What does that mean? On TikTok, we see him promoting, "Your prayers have been answered. It's finally here." These are shots of Celeste in life. Next day, April 24, the tickets officially go on sale. He travels from L.A. to New York City. Now, that is inferred because the next day he had a New York City pop-up event. April 25, Withered, Darkroom Interscope released, debuted at number 13 on the Billboard 200. That's to you, Caitlin Becker. Number 13 on the Billboard 200. That ain't shabby, Caitlin.
He wasn't a household name. He's not Diddy. He's not R. Kelly. He's not Jay-Z. Before he was accused of murder or suspected in this murder, I don't know how many people outside of the music world would have been able to tell you who he was. That was only the point that I was trying to make there. And he certainly was an up-and-comer. He certainly was on the upswing of his career. And like I said, that is a big reason why prosecutors believe that he did this to her, that he massacred this girl. And I was not saying under any circumstances that I thought that this was a pit stop before he was getting out of prison. I was just noting that he has a crack defense team, major, major defense team. He's being repped by Blair Burke, who in Hollywood is one of the biggest names out there. She's worked with Lindsay Lohan, Britney Spears, Harvey Weinstein. So he has quite a team behind him there. And I think that if I know Blair Burke the way I do, covering her for all these years, she's going to take any opportunity to be able to poke holes in just the most minor places in the prosecution's case to try to get this guy out, back out in the world, which is her entire, you know, purpose. And that is why I think they made the choice to put him in solitary ultimately, because he is notorious. He's more notorious now that he's been involved in this crime and in this slaying. And so you gotta keep him separate, because if something happens, she's gonna use it to her benefit.
If something happens, in other words, he's killed behind bars, she won't have a job anymore. Yep. It'll be over. She'll be representing his estate. So let me follow up on what you were just saying. He's at the top, in the top 20 on the 200 Billboard. But think back. No one at one time had heard of Dolly Parton or the Beatles. I mean, I could go on. And then suddenly, they're a huge mega hit known worldwide. What do you make of the timeline, Caitlin? Oh, hey, before I get back to the timeline, you mentioned his elite legal team. You mentioned Blair Burke. Who else is on the team?
He has a huge legal team behind him. The first person I saw and focused in on was Blair Burke there. That's the big name that stuck out to me. And that is who, if I was accused of something in Hollywood, that's the person that I would want representing me. And to your point on the timeline is so important. The tour, the tickets, the pop-ups, the travel, all of that happening in almost the immediate future to when people, prosecutors and investigators, believe this girl was killed and dismembered is pivotal, because it goes to, at least I think, motive. It goes to motive, and it goes to trying to clean up what could have been a messy situation that could have, you know, hampered his career and stopped that flow of money, those millions of dollars that were coming into him, and ultimately kind of screwed him over. Ironically, he's probably going to prison for the rest of his life. And while it probably likely won't happen, might face the death penalty. Not that I think that's going to come to fruition. But I think the timeline is one of the most telling reasons as to why this went down, how it went down, and when it went down.
Dr. Bethany Marshall joining us, renowned psychoanalyst out of this jurisdiction, L.A. She is the author of Deal Breakers. You can see her now on Bravo and Peacock, and you can find her at drbethanymarshall.com. Dr. Bethany, think about it. If Steve Fisher is correct, and based on the timeline we're going through, you'll see why I believe he is correct. And Steve, when we get back to the timeline, I want you to layer over digital evidence to prove your theory overlaid with the timeline, because I think that's what the cops are doing. That said, his theory, Dr. Bethany, is that last time Celeste seen is entering his home April 23 that evening. She's never seen alive again. He thinks that she was killed around that time and that the body was stashed somewhere, then later dismembered. Now, keep in mind also that Steve Fisher can detail a huge burn pit, an indoor type of oven that was found still in the box in his garage, and farm implements that could be used to destroy or dismember someone, to kill or dismember someone. All that said, the psyche, the frame of mind one must have to kill and then go to a pop-up in New York and act like nothing's wrong while the body is cooling somewhere.
You know, Nancy, this data
that takes nerves of steel.
This data is rich, Nancy. And what I hear in this, first of all, let's go back to the t-shirt or the shirts that he's selling with blood splattered all over it. The song called Romantic Homicide. He is a young man. He's 20 years old, and his loose band of characters around him also have very young brains. So the way they planned this out was not slick. These are not slick criminals, Nancy. These are kids. And you know what, Nancy? What's interesting to me is that because these are all kids and not slick criminals, kids are easily scared. All these other kids in the house, they're not going to be that loyal to him. They would rather be witnesses than be defendants. So there's going to be a lot of information that comes out in court, and this case will close quickly. This is a new trend, Nancy. This is swift justice, not victims who are being predated on for years before the perpetrator comes to the notice of law enforcement.
Crime Stories with Nancy Grace.
Back to Steve Fisher's timeline. And remember, all this is happening when, according to Steve Fisher, he believes Celeste is already dead. The album drop, April 25. According to Steve Fisher's timeline, she's already dead. Withered, released, now at number 13 on Billboard 200. Live appearance, pop-up, New York City's Union Square, performs Afterlife, how ironic, for the first time at the Band Lab pop-up acoustic set. D4VD visibly breaks down crying mid-song while performing Afterlife, April 25. Here's a shot of that. There is D4VD breaking down crying April 25, in New York, performing for the first time after life. Now, to Steve Fisher, you believe she's already dead while he's conducting all of these performances.
I do, and that's what prosecutors have told us in their press conference and the charging documents, that April 23rd, he invites her over to the house, and she is never seen again. And then May 5th, I don't know exactly how they got that date. I assume this is from people that are talking, though. But May 5th is the date they believe she's dismembered. And that's a wide gap of time. And he's not even in town. It makes it very, interesting, to say the least. And, you know, one thing I think is going to be important here, just very simple things. You know, since she's 14 years old, how did she get over to the house? Because she didn't have the ability to drive herself over or anything. So did he get her an Uber that's going to show document that coming over, or did somebody bring her over and then leave and never took her back to where she came from? Things like that would be interesting to find out.
Question to you regarding the timeline. There was that guys, very quickly, could you describe that? It's basically an incinerator that you observed in the home, and those implements that could be used to dismember someone?
Yeah, so we found in the house what had been delivered there was a burn cage, which is it's marketed as an incinerator. They're often used on farms to incinerate everything from trash to animal carcasses, and it burns up to 1600 degrees, and that's what it's advertised as. And then we also found a chainsaw. It had not been used, but we found a chainsaw. And, you know, the rental house, first of all, comes with yard people and everything like that. It's not like you're responsible for doing it. And even if you were, the way the lot is and stuff, you would have professionals use a chainsaw there. So put together with what's happened, it's, you know, it makes you wonder if there were several options they were putting on the table for possibly getting rid of her body in complete. And I'll never understand how she was just left in the car like that.
It will be, I'll be curious to find out when he ordered the burn cage. To Joanna Nieves joining us, a renowned criminal defense attorney, founder of the Nieves Law Firm there in that jurisdiction of California. You can find her at thenievislawfirm.com. Joanna, if what Fisher's timeline bears is borne out, if it is borne out to be true, how would D4VD David Anthony Burke explain that he orders a home incinerator, a burn cage, and then she ends up dead within 24, 36 hours?
Yeah, I definitely think it speaks to that 40 plus terabytes of information that we're all missing. Like, did he actually make this order? Was he the one that paid for it? When did that order take place? Was it before or after the alleged April 23rd date? I think there's so much for us to still discover. Ms. Burke asked for discovery informally on the first day of the appearance. There's so much data that's out there that the prosecution is relying on. One thing that's advantageous for us is that they're pushing for a speedy prelim. It's set on day 3 of 10, and hopefully it doesn't go beyond that 10 day limit, so that the public, who's so invested in this, can start seeing what the prosecution is relying on. Because honestly, the purchase of a burn cage may speak to the mutilation of the corpse, but does not necessarily speak to the actual homicide.
Steve Fisher, do you remember that late night Santa Barbara trip that we know D4VD David Anthony Burke took around 2 o'clock in the morning, something like that? He goes up into a heavily forested area. Do you believe there's any chance that is where the body was dismembered, then put in 2 body bags and brought back?
Yeah, I go back and forth on that, and I'll tell you why. Because we didn't find any evidence of the Santa Barbara trip. We did find some photographic evidence that he spent time in the National Forest, which was still inside LA County. But, you know, the charging documents themselves, and I understand this is, you can probably explain this better than anyone, might not have to be exact on this, but they say in the county of Los Angeles, she was dismembered. So I don't know. We didn't find anything about the Santa Barbara trip.
Mm-hmm.
So I just can't speak to that.
Well, you're right.
Yeah.
There's a jurisdictional issue there. So let me refer you to his travelings within L.A. County. Would that include a forested area?
It would. And I could see that happening out there because it's easier to, you know, not have that evidence. But I don't understand how she ended up where she ended up after being dismembered.
Here's my question back to you, which I'm going to go to you on, Bethany, because, you know, go through all this, managed to elude justice for so many months, and he has a body in his trunk of his car, and they're moving it around the neighborhood, and they're caught on video on door cam doing it. But first, Joe Scott Morgan, at the location of her dismemberment, if it is in nature, is there a way, even now, that a cadaver dog could hit on it?
Yeah, I think that it's going to be difficult because the remains obviously have been removed. However, if they can zero in on a particular area, and, you know, Nancy, just go with me here, hear what I'm saying. If that is the case, she would have already been in a rather advanced state of decomposition when she would have been removed, allegedly, to this Santa Barbara location, okay? So any kind, I don't know how to put this delicately, but any kind of dismemberment that would have gone on out there would have left traces in a specific area, okay? And I'm talking about bodily fluids, I'm talking about bone dust, all these sorts of things that we encounter along the way. Could there be a remnant out there? Potentially, but it is not going to be a strong hit, because I know where you're going with this. You're thinking, can we bring cadaver dogs out there? It's worth a shot to do it, But I think that there's going to be less of a chance of finding something out in that remote location. If they can specifically identify it, I think there'll be less of a chance as opposed back to the house.
To Dr. Bethany Marshall, back to Steve Fisher's observation, why not just bury her body where it was dismembered? You know that house? It was like a zoo. There were people in and out all the time, according to Steve Fisher. And I guarantee you, there you go, that is the home rented by D4VD. These are from our friends at TMZ. Dr. Bethany, how could he affect a dismemberment in that house with people in and out, barging in and out of his bedroom? Impossible. He gets the burn cage, can't use it. Too many witnesses. So one working theory is he dismembered her in a heavily forested area. Why did he bring her body back in two body bags in his Tesla?
You know, Nancy, I agree with your clinical assessment of stupid. Stupid is written all over this. And you know what? 20-year-olds don't talk to each other. They text each other. They take videos and send them to each other. So what's going to come out in the digital evidence in court is the story of why she ended up in the frunk rather than buried somewhere and where she was dismembered. And the mystery is going to be solved. But it's still a mystery now. And what I think happened is that there was probably a lot of infighting in that group, and that just a few of the many band of characters knew what was happening. So he allegedly kills her, goes to his pop-up, leaves her in the frunk. And then there's a big argument about, well, where do we put her? Do we bury her? Do we leave her in the frunk? What do we do with her? And it's just like idiots, you know, not being able to make up their minds. So they just move the car around incessantly. But do you know what I'm hearing as a possible defense strategy in court? And I'm not an attorney. I'm just a psychoanalyst. They're going to say, Burke is going to say, that's not a burn cage. That was a smoker. They were going to smoke salmon. You know, they just ordered the wrong piece of equipment. But back to the timeline, they didn't know what to do with the body. So they just made really idiotic 20-year-old decisions and then texted incessantly. So the mystery will be solved.
21 years old, Dr. Bethany, 21. Old enough to vote, old enough to drink, old enough to buy cigarettes, old enough to know better, old enough to get the death penalty in California. To Dave Mack joining us, clarify, what is D4VD's net worth? And when we're talking about the date of death, if she's so decomposed and they can't get a date of death, you believe you know how they have pegged it on April 23?
Nancy, bottom line on his financials. Right now, David Anthony Burke has a net worth loosely between $2 and $3 million. Do remember, Nancy, that his money did not start with signing the record deal. He had built a social media following using TikTok and YouTube and things like that to develop his following and develop his money. And so he's been making money for some time, but $2 to $3 million is what he has right about now. As for the pinpointing April 23rd as the time of death, and then the May 5th dismemberment. To get to those dates, Nancy, law enforcement has, you know, we know that they had the incredible digital breakdown of the timeline. We didn't know what it led to. We just knew that investigators said that D4VD made a late night trip to Santa Barbara County in the late spring of 2025. That's what they told everybody. So now they pinpointed that D4VD invited Celeste, lured her to his home April 23rd, and killed her. That's what law enforcement alleges. So they obviously have information, whether it be digital from cell phones. We've got cameras everywhere. But apparently, based on the wording lured her to the home, Celeste was not living with D4VD at the time of her death. That means she was staying with somebody else because she's a child. She's only 14.
You don't know that. She was certainly not at home. He could have lured her home from choir practice, for all I know. That doesn't mean she was living elsewhere. Joe Scott Morgan, thoughts?
Oh, listen, I think that they have specific information, and I concur. I think that somebody has rolled over on this. It's just, you know, when you get these specific dates like this, and particularly when you're going to, Nancy, you're talking about a specific date for dismemberment. Nancy, in all of my years, I have never heard anything like this. And I cover on body bags, I cover a lot of dismemberments. Brother Dave and I do. And we've seen an uptick in these things, believe it or not. However, to that point, how in the world would you know that? Because that's not like you're necessarily tracking it with some kind of electronics or something like that. You're talking about an action that involves using tools to essentially rip apart a child's body. You know, how are you going to come into that information? I think that they have found a pressure point, and they are applying pressure to that point. I am just glued. I'm gonna hang on every word that you have to say over the next few days, because I think more is to come in this case. We're going to find out far more specifics than we have right now.
And to Caitlin Becker joining us, senior national correspondent, New York Post. She is the star of a hit podcast, New York Post Cast. Caitlin, do you believe the preliminary hearing will go forward tomorrow?
I agree that it's probably going to get continued. It's interesting that they did it so quickly. His team requested that it get sped up. So on one hand, say they don't have any discovery, they have no information beyond that 3-page report, and then to say they want the prelim. I do think that it's probably going to get continued, so we won't get a ton of information tomorrow. However, we might glean something about the medical examiner's report that the judge did agree to release. So that could give us a little bit of more information. And to everyone else's point about people rolling over and not having that hard evidence, I've covered the celebrity world for so long. Young celebrities, particularly celebrities who are up and coming, they tend to have a massive crowd around them, and they tend not to want to do things alone or for themselves. So I think it's impossible that this man would have gone through with all of these actions single-handedly. So people were there, people know something, and as you said, they want to be witnesses, not defendants. So it's going to come down to people turning on him on the stand, and that is what I think we're going to see moving forward.
So Joanna Nieves, veteran trial lawyer, joining us from this jurisdiction of California, you know, straight out of Aesop's Fables. Be careful what you ask, my dear, for you will surely get it. They said, speed up, speed up. We want to prove our innocence. So now they're getting it. Preliminary hearing set for tomorrow morning. Why would they do that?
Because he has a right to a speedy prelim at this point to happen within 10 days. He can also waive that, and it can happen within 60, and trial can happen within 60 days as well. So I think what they're doing is trying to get all of the Brady material that they can. Discovery is due at least 30 days prior to trial, but when it comes to prelim, the DA is responsible for turning over all exculpatory, favorable, impeachment type information, witness statements. And so they should have that in hand so that they're able to put on a fair defense at prelim and be able to cross-examine those witnesses. And so when you keep that 10-day window, then at least there's going to be an exchange of parts of the discovery, and most of the time it's those critical parts of discovery to help defend the case.
We wait as justice unfolds. That prelim set for tomorrow morning, and we will be watching. If you know or think you know anything regarding the death of this young girl, Celeste Rivas, please dial 213-486-6890. Repeat, 213-486-6890. Good night, friend.
This is an iHeart podcast. Guaranteed human.